Call the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee to order. Welcome, everyone. We're in the end day, so schedules are a little off, and I apologize for keeping you all waiting in this very warm room today. Today we are going to, I'll announce right at the beginning that we're going to carry over House Bill 2472, and we are going to carry over Senate Bill 832. So you can take those off your dance cards. We will take up Senate Bill 555 as the last thing because that involves a public hearing, and we can move through these other bills, I think, very quickly. So at this point, I will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 621 and close the public hearing on 621 and open a work session on Senate Bill 621.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. As you recall, Senate Bill 621 pertains to the tax credit for contributions to the Oregon Production Investment Fund. Under current law, the cap there is $5 million, and the bill would increase the total cap to $7.5 million per year. You have a revenue impact statement in your packet that shows a revenue loss of $4.7 million in 2009-11 and $5 million thereafter. And there is a fiscal impact that is a minimal expenditure impact.
Okay, and as you recall, we had an extensive public hearing on Senate Bill 621, and we've had time to think about it. And we are now in work session, so Senator Morse, I understand you don't support this bill, so if you would like to make a motion, you may, and if you would like someone else to make it, we will do that.
I will be a loyal vice chair and move.
Madam Chair.
Let's get the motion on the floor first.
Okay. I move Senate Bill 621 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morris has moved moved Senate Bill 621 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Senator Haas.
Yes, a question for Chris or Paul or you. You had mentioned that the discount, the tax credit practice would be changed in this. Can you point me to that? Show me where that is, or how this will function in a different way.
The cap is in the bill on page 2, line 19. The $5 million gets increased to $7.5 million.
But the structure of the
discounting for the sale of the transfer of the credits, is that changed?
This bill doesn't touch that.
This is a non-transferable credit, correct?
No, this one can be transferred, but the bill doesn't address that issue. It just changes the cap.
I was mistaken if I said that. Not in this meeting, I didn't say that. Okay. So tell us how that works, Chris. I conveyed inadvertently some false information. My apologies, Senator Haas.
Well, the way the credit works is that somebody would make a contribution to the fund, and then their the contribution would be 90% of the tax credit that they get back. So they would make a contribution to the film and video office, and they would get a credit for the corresponding amount. And if they wanted to, they could transfer it. I don't think in all of the discussions on transferable credits that have occurred this session and all of the other credits, I don't believe this one gets transferred that often. It's not one of the primary ones when the Assembly has talked about transferable credits. But technically, in statute, it can be transferred.
Madam Chair, I'm supportive. I just to reemphasize the point that we need to look at this issue, because I think the state's leaving a lot of money on the table doing it this way instead of grants or just, you know, putting a cap on the discount or whatever we have to do.
Correct, and I think this has come up in other contexts, and I agree with you, Senator Haas, that this whole area of transferability is, we got partway there this session.
Right.
I think it needs a continued discussion. Is there any other discussion? Senator Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think Senator Telfer actually was before me, though.
Oh, I'm sorry. She was.
Thank you. You've already got your voice.
In another committee that Senator Telfer and I served on, there was a bill that, was that what you were about to ask? That would have redirected a portion of the existing credit to local companies, and I'm assuming that money is added to this if that bill were to pass all the way through would also be subject to that requirement. Am I right, Chris?
Madam Chair, if I...
Senator Telford.
You're totally correct, and that is my bill, one of my bills, and it's due for its third reading on the House side this week. And if I may continue, which puts me in a bit of a bind in that, you know, I think another 5% of $2.5 million would be great for independent filmmakers, which is what that bill is. My concern is, at this economic times, I just hate to put that much more stress on the general fund here at the state level with another $2.5 million going to that versus something else. So I'll be voting no, but it does put me in a little bit of a quandary in that it would bring a lot more financing to independent filmmakers throughout the state, which I think is a good thing. But given the economic situation these days, I just don't think the timing is right to increase this fund.
And Senator Telfer, I think you've already gathered that I am. This is not the place to go for tax credits in general. what persuaded me on this tax credit was, you know, not only, you know, helping an industry to grow, but also the way it's structured, that this credit, the hit on the general fund does not occur until after the production has already poured millions into the economy. And I was persuaded that that is actual money that's coming into the economy. And I was persuaded that the Echo Northwest study was correct in that we are actually making money off of this credit. I think the key thing is, with all these credits, you know, are the credits too high? In other words, would people come here anyway? And I, for one, was persuaded that the credit does make a difference on whether productions come here or not. And so what the effect of this credit really is instead of being able to draw the movie industry here for 6 months of the year, with the expansion of the credit, we can draw them here 9 months of the year. And again, it's no accident that this is, you know, waited so long, because it took a lot of consideration to make sure that we were actually getting our money's worth out of it. So I don't know if that helps or not, but we're going to send it on its way. Senator Morris.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And your arguments are compelling. However, in this environment, I find it difficult to be talking about tax increases and extending another $2.5 million in tax expenditures. I understand the economic feedbacks of this, but I just don't feel it's time to do it. We, you know, in 2003 it was $1 million. We raised that to $5 million in 2007. We do have a successful industry. Adding another $2.5 million in this biennium is just something that I'm not prepared to do. So I will be a no. Thank you.
Appreciate the discussion and these difficult choices that we're going to be making increasingly from here on out. Is there any other discussion?
Madam Chair,
Senator Rosenbaum.
I just want to say that I agree with the comments about the times that we're in, that certainly I'm not a fan of expanding tax credits generally, and certainly not now. But I've been persuaded by the many, many people that I've heard from, in many of them in my district, about local jobs that have been created. And I think we need to do more of that, especially now with this massive unemployment statewide and in Portland, and where a lot of these productions take place. And so I think this will help, and that's why I'm supporting it.
Thank you. And I appreciated actually being invited to your recent town hall, where I also heard some of those voices from your district. Okay. Would you call the roll, please?
Senator Hatch?
Aye.
Senator Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Senator Telfer?
No.
Senator Morris?
No.
Senator Burdick?
Aye. Okay. Senate Bill 621 passes to the Senate floor. And Senator Rosenbaum, I liked your message. Would you like to carry the bill?
I will. Thank you.
All right. Now we will have a work session on House Bill 2074.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, as you recall, House Bill 2074 divides responsibility for funding a tax supervising and conservation commission between a county and the other municipal corporation within the county. Last time, you adopted the amendment -A4 clarifies the languages. And then allows a municipal corporation with a population not exceeding 200,000 to opt out of the TSCC jurisdiction, and it takes effect upon passage. And we have all the paperwork ready.
All the paperwork ready, and we have a -4 amendment that I think we got before.
We did move that, Madam Chair.
That's right. It's been, thank you for reminding me, Senator Morse. You said you'd do that. Okay, the -4 amendment is already sequestered within this bill, so I think we're ready for a motion, Senator Morse.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2074 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morse has moved House Bill 2074 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. I will carry this bill. Okay, now we'll open a work session on Senate Bill 726.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 726 authorizes eligible Native American tribes to request Economic and Community Development Department to designate a reservation enterprise zone. It authorizes eligible Indian tribes to co-sponsor reservation partnership zones and makes enterprise zone exemptions and tax credit available to a reservation enterprise zone with amendment -1. And there are some clarifications made. And it allows reservation enterprise zone to include land outside the boundaries of the tribe's reservation. And it allows a reservation partnership zone to include lands within the jurisdiction of a co-sponsoring city, county, or port.
Okay, in committee, it was quite a while we had a hearing on this, and we had good representation from the tribes and no opposition from the county, if I'm correct. So, Senator Morse, we have a -1 amendment.
Madam Chair, I move the -1 amendment to House Bill 726.
It's actually Senate Bill 726.
Excuse me, did I say House Bill? Senate Bill. I was reading, too.
It should be a House Bill.
SB. I think that stands for Senate. Senate Bill 726.
Senator Morse has moved the -1 amendment to Senate Bill 726. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Morse.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 726 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morse has moved Senate Bill 726 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Telfer, would you like to carry this?
Most definitely.
Absolutely. Okay, now we will open a work session on Senate Bill 192.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 192 makes changes in the Historic Property Special Assessment Program. And with Amendment -4, actually -4 amendment replaces the contents of the original bill and makes a myriad of changes. The important element there is, instead of 15-year partial tax exemption, we now have 10-year partial tax exemption. Also the bill authorizes certification for the second 10-year period of partial tax exemption. One of the important elements in this bill is to extend the application and participation in the historic property partial tax exemption until July 1, 2020.
Okay, so that's a 10-year sunset on this, and committee, I want to point out that this amendment is a product of a work group that worked on this through the interim that was later refined at the direction of the chair to make sure that people who are taking advantage of this exemption actually do something to improve the building itself. So this would require an investment of 10% of the building value within the first 5 years. And in exchange, if someone gets to the end of their 10-year period and they come up with another investment that's approved by the historical property folks, then they can sign up for another 10 years if they make that investment. One of the most positive things about this amendment, I believe, is the task force recommendation that the condominiums be assessed more appropriately. And of course, this affects my home county of Multnomah County. We have Roger Roper in the audience if anybody has any questions. And I wanted to thank the task force, and especially Mr. Roper and some of my cohorts in Multnomah County and City of Portland for participating very constructively in this program. Okay. Senator Morse, do you have a motion on the Dash 4s?
Madam Chair, I move the Dash 4 amendments to Senate Bill 192.
Senator Morse has moved the Dash 4 amendments to Senate Bill 192. And is there any discussion? Any objections? So ordered. Senator Morse.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 192 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morse has moved Senate Bill 192 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Objection. So ordered. I will carry Senate Bill 192. Okay, moving right along. Now we will open a work session on Senate Bill 976.
Madam Chair, committee members, Senate Bill 976 deals with 10th grade assessment testing with a nationally normed test. The bill would require the Department of Education to grant a waiver to eligible school districts that request a waiver from using the Department of Education's test and allow them to use their own entity for providing that test. It makes a district eligible for the waiver if it had a contract in 07-08 with their entity and meets other criteria. And then it would also require the Department of Education to pay the assessment costs for the waiver districts out of the $550,000 from the state school fund that would otherwise go to education service districts. The department estimates that this could apply to up to 10 districts having about 7,500 10th grade students, for a total test cost of $85,000 a year.
That's for all the districts?
All of the 10 that would be eligible.
Okay. Senator Haas, do you have anything to add to that summary?
It was an excellent summary.
I guess it was an excellent summary. Do I hear a motion, Senator Morse?
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 976 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morse has moved Senate Bill 976 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Objection?
Madam Chair?
Senator Rosenbaum.
I still do have some unresolved concerns about this bill, so for now I'll be voting no. I may change my mind.
Okay, thank you for that, Senator Rosenbaum. Okay, would you call the roll, please?
Senator Haas?
Aye.
Senator Rosenbaum?
No.
Senator Telfer?
Aye.
Senator Morris?
Aye.
Chair Burdick?
Aye. Senate Bill 976 moves to the Senate floor, and Senator Haas, would you like to carry it?
Sure.
Okay, now we will open a public hearing on House Bill 3056. Trying to think. We already had a hearing on House Bill 3056. If Mr. Justin Martin is in the audience, we'll ask him up. And if he isn't, we won't ask him up. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3056 and open a work session on House Bill 3056.
Chair Buddick, members of the committee, at House Bill 3056, the Dash 8 Amendment amends statutes relating to urban renewal plans and the maximum amount of indebtedness that may be issued or incurred under a plan. It establishes a mechanism for an urban renewal agency to limit collection of taxes either for a single fiscal year or in the future, and allows an urban renewal agency to notify the assessor to collect maximum divisional taxes for newly approved urban renewal plans and substantially amended plans. Dash 8 amendment has a new twist in it, and it excludes a recently retired gap bond levy for a specified school district from the consolidated billing rate in calculating the division of tax. And by the way, that additional element had some revenue impact, so you have revenue impact there, and all other languages are permissible. But this last element actually has impact on division of tax right away. And so Portland Development Commission will collect less from division of taxes, and then Portland Public Schools will keep that amount. The amount at for fiscal year 08-09 is estimated to be $164,000, and it'll increase over time.
And this will be local revenue.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. All right. Just to put this in perspective, we had this is a consensus bill, and I just want to again thank the work group that worked on this. This has defied resolution for session after session. They finally came up with a wonderful compromise, and then they had the patience and good spirit to allow the Portland gap bond situation to be resolved within this bill. So I expect smooth sailing for this, and again, want to thank all the parties. Senator Morris, do you have a motion on the A8 amendments?
Madam Chair, I move the Dash 8 amendments to House Bill 3056.
Senator Morris has moved the Dash 8 amendments to House Bill 3056. Is there any discussion? Any objections? So ordered. Senator Morris.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3056 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morris has moved House Bill 3056 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Guess who hasn't been signed a bill yet, Senator Morris?
This looks like my bill.
Looks like yours. Got your name all over it.
Okay. I will do that. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, at this time, I will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 555.
Madam Chair, committee members, Senate Bill 555 with a Dash 1 amendment modifies the school district transportation grant within the school equalization formula. It changes the grant to 63% of transportation costs. Currently, the percentage of transportation costs can be 70, 80, or 90%, depending upon the cost per student, with the highest cost per student districts receiving the 80 or 90%. There, I think you still have a table that I gave to you at the last hearing, the simulation dash 12 that shows the changes in the transportation grant and the general purpose grant per district. The shift for all of the districts combined is about $2.6 million per year.
Okay. We will start out with right. We'll start out with Lori Wimmer and Kent Kunziker and Tricia Smith.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Madam Chair and committee members, for your record, Lori Wimmer representing the Oregon Education Association, its 48,000 members, here today to oppose the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 555. I'm handing out to you a worksheet we've prepared today that shows you the 53% of the school districts in the state who are adversely impacted by this bill. That is the majority of school districts, although not the majority of students, mostly, as you'll see, in small communities where the financial struggles are the grimmest under the prospect of the next budget. This is a shift of money. It is not a shift of intention as we see it. So one of the things I thought that I could best address for you all to help understand why moving to the 63% mark is something that we would not be able to support is that this flat funding disproportionately cuts some over others in a kind of skewed way. And so I would ask what the purpose is and whether it is realized that there are unintended consequences to this change. Is it to force a public policy change relative to more money to the classroom? That's what I've heard. This formula change will not do that. What it will do is simply shift money that goes to the districts that will lose funds, $26 a student on average statewide, and will send it elsewhere instead. Meanwhile, whether or not one has which routes, how many of them, and at what cost are unaffected by this, you'd have to change the mandate for transportation in order to change the policy. So is it to lower costs in high-cost regions? Well, there's only one way to do that, and that's if you lay off or downsize the wages of bus drivers, in which case I would characterize this change as a bus driver tax. Is it to make transportation funding fairer? Well, there's, as I said, a disproportionate impact on rural and remote students. So that would seem not to be a fairness issue, but an unfairness issue for us. And finally, is it to discourage transporting students on the part of districts? And I would remind you that in a lot of these rural districts, kids from disadvantaged and troubled homes would be most impacted if these routes are impacted. And without, and given that in some of these cases, transportation is 25% of their budgets, they don't have economies of scale in the way more urban or suburban districts do. This is an impact that is very grave to those districts that are already struggling to stay open. And finally, we heard the argument that 70% is still 70%, and so therefore it is fair and equitable. That's the exact same argument I would remind you that flat taxers make. So if you're comfortable with that theory that a static percentile is the definition of fairness, then you probably also are in favor of the flat tax. So with that, I'd be happy to take any questions. Thank you.
We would appreciate not being informed what else we might be in favor of. Just the comments
Thank
to
you.
The bill, please. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tricia Smith. I represent Oregon School Employees Association, and we are here in opposition, strong opposition, to the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 555. I regret always when we don't get to talk about student transportation without something like this, so that we can educate legislators on student transportation, why it exists, and why it is funded as it is. The first thing I'd like to remind you, though, is that student transportation is 4% of the budget for K-12. So we're not talking about moving around a whole lot of money in the general context of the numbers you're dealing with. But that 4% means a significant, significant difference in whether or not school districts can transport students safely to and from school as the legislature has demanded that they do. The legislature has mandated in 1991 student transportation, and the reason they did that is because the legislature mandated that children go to school. Children don't have the chance or the option not to go to school in Oregon, and policymakers long ago recognized that because that was the policy in this state and because parents all over the state no longer have the option of a parent at home to get those kids to and from school, that we had a responsibility to transport them. And since we're transporting other people's children, we have the responsibility to do it as safely as we possibly can and to make sure that since transportation, for the most part, the major expenses in transportation are static and beyond the control of the district, and large infrastructure costs are involved in transportation, policymakers understood that it was important to have a partnership in assuring that safe transportation occur when school districts transport kids. They did that because before they started making those decisions, kids got killed. They got killed, and they didn't want that to happen again. And since those decisions have been made, there has not been a single serious injury in a school bus accident in Oregon. And that is certainly something that policymakers should be very proud of. This change will make a small effect in the billions of dollars that you're having to deal with here in this legislature, but it will make a dramatic effect in school districts all across the state, large and small. Even the large districts will have to transfer some of more of their general fund revenue to their transportation program to keep their safety at the level it is. 40% of student transportation costs occur in special education. It's federally mandated that special ed students are transported, and there's not a thing that a district can do about that. So there's nothing that districts can do to reduce the cost of 40% of their transportation costs. The rest of it, most of it, is to and from school for those that you have mandated be transported. And then the last piece of it is something called supplemental plans, and most districts have those. Those are the kids who districts don't want, Portland Public doesn't want to cross Stark Street, for example, or the kids who would have to walk in a very dangerous area in order to get to school, even though they live within a mile of the school. The district and those parents have decided to transport those kids anyway. Those perhaps could be changed, but if they change them, they will compromise the students' safety. We ask you not to make this change, and we certainly ask you not to do it without understanding that the safety of children all over the state will be compromised if you do. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, Kent Hunsaker with the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. As I look at this bill, I'm very opposed to the bill. There's several things I wanted to point out. The first one was in 2003, the legislature approved the current funding. It used to be 70%, then it went to 70, 80, and 90. They based that approval on the fact that the formula should only be adjusted for uncontrollable cost differences. And we have several examples of that in the state school fund formula. High-cost disability students is an example of that. The facility grant is an example of that because many districts have lots of need to build new facilities, and the facility grant was one of those that fit in the category of uncontrollable cost difference. Transportation fits into that category. It's an uncontrollable cost difference between districts. The reason these small districts were given 90% and 80% instead of 70 was because their transportation costs were so high, took up a large part of their budget, and they had less to support their regular programs. So that legislative body was wise in their approval of this because it provided a more level playing field for the districts across the state. You're going to hear from several districts. Every one of the districts majorly impacted by this bill are small districts that were in the 80 and 90% bracket. They cannot control these costs. In many cases, the reason that they have costs this high is because they're transporting small numbers of kids long distances, and they are required to do that. I'm wanted to mention one thing, and that is there seems to be an interest in some incentive in this body to control transportation. And some time ago, I had a thought about how to do that, and that was to actually open it up and say, you save money, you get to keep it, and then gradually roll that back off. I really believe that that you won't find that, even if you provided the incentive for people, if they could save money in transportation, they'd get to keep it. But at least if you want to find out if that's the case, that would be a way to do it. This is not a way to do it. It punishes a very small section of districts that already have difficulty operating their programs, and you're going to hear from some of them. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there questions of this panel? Thank you. Audience, my apologies. We have a tradition around here of giving preference to people, at least in timing, who have come more than 100 miles, and I took it from the wrong sheet. We've got our usual suspects here, and I left off the people who have actually traveled, so my apologies. We'll make up for it now. So our next panel will be Newell Cleaver, Rhonda Shirley, Michael Rule, and Peter Tarzian. I think we can just pull up another chair. Welcome. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Burdick. My name is Newell Cleaver, and I'm superintendent from John Day, and I think you're being handed some of the notes that I'm going to be talking from. I hope it's okay to have a visual of the district behind me, and I have my transportation supervisor here, and I want you to get a mental picture of what a district the size of 2,000 square miles looks like. It's half the size of Grant County, and Grant County is one of the largest districts in Oregon, about 4,500 square miles. And it's not a flat county. If you've been to Grant County, you know that there are lots of mountains and some narrow roads. So obviously we're here in opposition of this bill. And I want to just cover some of the things that it will do to our school district if the bill passes and the impact that it would have on us. It would affect the largest school district in Grant County. And again, it's a district of 2,000 square miles. Our school district educates more than 70% of the students in Grant County. So we are small in comparison to some districts, but we are the largest district in Grant County. Our buses run more than 1,000 miles per day. More than 1,000 miles per day. By moving our district from 80% to 63% reimbursement, our district will have a net revenue loss of $116,000 per year. Portland Public Schools, on the other hand, would see a net increase in revenue of approximately $311,000. Or closer to home, the Hermiston School District would see an increase of approximately $91,000. Our school district to date has done many things to be more efficient in transportation, including going to a four-day school week several years ago. Not a new concept for Grant County. We've cut five school days out of our calendar for next year for the 09 budget to balance. A loss of $116,000 will more than likely require more school days to be cut or the loss of essential programs. This is coming at a time when our public has been told that we have cut enough and has hoped to get through the coming year without further cuts. This bill costs serious doubt on the legislators' understanding of struggling rural schools. The timing of Senate Bill 555 is unconscionable and creates a firestorm which will reopen old wounds between urban and rural schools. Our school district invites the sponsors of this bill and anyone who is inclined to support its passage to come to our school district and visit, ride our buses, with our kids and be prepared to board at 5:30 a.m. and get home at 6 to 6:30 p.m. The primary reason our costs of transportation are higher than most others is because we have a much larger and more challenging area in which to serve students. Senate Bill 555 is unfair and extreme. It comes at a time when rural districts are already struggling just to provide minimal basic services. The entire equalization rationale, which many of us have fought for over the past three decades, is dealt a severe blow if this bill passes. And finally, it is about kids, and I firmly believe that it will hurt more kids in the state of Oregon than it will help. Thank you.
Thank you. I am Rhonda Shirley. I'm superintendent of the Joseph School District in Wallowa County. And I, too, am deeply concerned about the proposal to reduce the amount of transportation reimbursement. One of our daily routes transports students over 100 miles round trip over dirt and gravel roads. If you've been to the Omnaha River Canyon, you may remember the conditions of the roads. Our reimbursement is calculated at 80%, so the proposed cut in transportation funding would amount to over $52,000 for us for next year. Cutting back our transportation budget is not an option, as we are bare bones now, and yet we're obligated to transport these students. This means that the shortfall will have to be picked up by cutting instructional programs and personnel. This will hurt the quality of education for our students. Our excellent all-day kindergarten or our K-12 art or K-12 music programs would have to be eliminated. I see this amendment as an inequitable way to cut some dollars. We at Joseph Schools are willing to do our part to deal with the hardship of our economic situation. However, the cut should be the same percentage for all students. Rural schools should not be penalized because of size and locale. I urge you to reconsider the amendment and to Senate Bill 555. And thank you very much for offering me the opportunity to testify.
Welcome.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, for the record, good afternoon, and thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Michael Ruling, Superintendent Principal of Monument School District. We are a small rural district in Grant County with 52 students K-12. We're 110 miles from a town of over 5,000. Prineville is 110 miles southwest. Pendleton is 110 miles northeast. The nearby small towns of Long Creek, Spray, and Dayville are 21 miles, 26 miles, and 39 miles away, just to give you an idea of our remoteness. Most Eastern Oregon schools went to four-day school weeks years ago, and that action alone saves the state school fund nearly 20%, or one out of 5 days, in transportation reimbursements. In grades 7 through 12, we have just 4.5 teachers. One social studies, half English teacher, one math, one science, and one career and technical ed teacher. If the transportation reimbursement cut becomes law, our students face going without one of these essential teachers in a time of increased graduation requirements. Districts can cut school days during short-term revenue declines like we're experiencing now, but cutting the transportation reimbursement would be a long-term catastrophe for our district. Our district began looking for ways to reduce bus maintenance costs last summer before the recession. This spring, we received bids to reduce our annual bus certification expense and negotiated with the vendor to lower the cost by a few thousand dollars. With 90% transportation reimbursement, this action will lead to a few more hundred dollars for our classroom, and we already do have the incentive to look for transportation efficiencies. We operate two bus routes plus a midday kindergarten run. We travel 32 miles in one direction and 18 miles the other every day, and that's just to pick up students in the morning. We rank at 94% transportation per ADMR, regular kids. Slicing the reimbursement from 90% to 63% would cut our revenues by another $31,050. The state school fund redistribution, as it gets thrown into the pot and back out again, of $4,089 pales in comparison to this loss. So our net revenue reduction of $26,961 is 3.1% of our state school fund grant at the $6 billion funding level for the next biennium. Just to gain some perspective, if Salem-Keizer School District, and I have nothing against larger districts, I'm a product of Portland Public Schools, but if Salem-Keizer were to experience a 3.1% revenue reduction for them, that'd be $9 million in shortfall, as opposed to the $264,000 benefit they would receive from this amendment. So sacrificing students in small rural communities for the sake of students in more populated areas is not good policy. Now please consider the needs of rural schools. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Peter Tarzian. I'm superintendent of schools at Falls City School District, a small school district in Polk County, and I'm also the legislative chair for the Oregon Small Schools Association. I just have just a couple of comments to add. Not all small schools, of course, have 80 or 90% reimbursements for their transportation. A good number of us, especially on this side of the mountains, are at the 70% range. And to give you an example, under this proposal, I would gain about $7,000 or just a little under 0.5% of my overall budget. None of my colleagues that I'm aware of in the 70% group would support this legislation because the hurt that it would create for the small schools and small school districts in the eastern side of the mountain or the folks that have long runs for transportation would be substantially greater than any gain we would see in revenue through our general purpose grants. And so I would just like to encourage the committee to reconsider accepting these amendments. And I and the Oregon Small Schools Association do not support Senate Bill 555 as it's currently structured. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I guess what's, and I can understand, you know, going down to the 63, in the testimony that we had by the sponsors of this, the reason it went down to 63 was to have, because we are cutting schools from essential budget level by about 10%. Mm-hmm. So the thought was to cut the transportation by that same amount so that you wouldn't be changing the ratio system-wide of transportation to school to the program funds. I guess where I'm struggling with this a little bit is that the transportation costs are reimbursed in full. So, I mean, they're reimbursed on their percentage, but for the actual costs, I'll get it right in a second. So, if you have, you know, transportation costs of $1 million. Regardless of whether you're a big urban district or whether you're a rural district, those actual costs are the basis for the percentage reimbursement. So I guess I'm struggling with what the rationale would be for having a higher percentage for the smaller districts that have more transportation costs when the actual basis is the actual costs themselves. Does anybody want to take that on?
I know in my district, Rhonda Shirley, I know in my district, because of the condition of the roads, our replacement of buses, and we also use a couple of Suburbans, we have to replace them more often, we have to replace tires more often, so the expenses are there.
But wouldn't that be, I mean, that's an actual expense, so you submit those, so... I guess what I'm struggling with, if it's based on actual expenses, no matter where you're located, I'm having trouble seeing. I'm not having any trouble seeing the gross reduction and how that could impact you. But from a policy standpoint, how you would justify having a higher percentage simply based on geography?
Madam Chair, thank you for your question and the consideration of the committee. The reason for the different levels of reimbursement is simply for our smaller district and other smaller districts like us. That, even though we would get 90% reimbursement if it were to stay as is, that's still, that remaining 10% is a large chunk of our budget. So that becomes a larger drain on our general fund. If that were reduced to 63%, we have a catastrophic drain on our general fund. We're not able to have the efficiencies of scale. We can't lop off a bus run. We're obligated to provide the transportation for those students, regardless if they move in 25 miles away or not. And so due to, we saw the map for District 3, due to some of the uniquenesses of the geography.
Madam Chair, could I respond to your question? Not sure if I understand your question, but let me take a shot at it. I know that a district like Grant School District, cost for transportation, if all things were equal, if everyone were at 63% or if everyone were at 70%, it would cost School District 3 considerably more per student to transport those students than it would District X, Y, or Z, simply because of distances and conditions of the roads. So we are dealt a hand that we don't control, which is basically parents living 60 miles out in those areas, and the law requires us to provide transportation. If we could control that factor, then maybe we could even the playing field. But because of where we live and the geographical conditions and the road conditions, we simply will be required to provide more dollars to transport those students than other school districts in the state.
But you still, you know, if you provide more dollars, you submit all those dollars to the state, and you get 70% back, just like any other district. So I guess what you're saying is the maybe the proportion of transportation costs?
Yes, that's what I'm saying, okay. per student.
Okay. And Ms. Shirley, you're from Joseph, right?
Yes.
Kudos for still having music and art.
Yes, we're pleased.
Does that have anything to do with the fact that you're an art colony?
That probably helps.
Okay. All right, thank you. Are there questions from the committee? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Again, my apologies for not taking you first. Our next panel will be Ivan Ritchie, Tom Porter, and I think it's Debbie Gillespie. I'm pretty sure about the Gillespie part.
It is, that's correct.
Oh, good. Thanks, Senator Haas, for that. He translated. Welcome.
Well, I don't think I'll be as eloquent as those that are more rehearsed than this, but Madam Chair and Committee, I'm Ivan Ritchie. I'm Superintendent of Sherman County School District, which is out on the east side. We are probably the district that will be impacted the most if this amendment were to pass. In looking at the table that was put out, we would be impacted at $155,000 in our district alone. And that would be a very significant hit to us in terms of our total budget. We transport 80% of our 277 students over an 831 square mile area. Our county is roughly 20 miles wide and 40 miles long. I have submitted a written testimony there, which I will not read to you, but I'd just like to hit some of the highlights and some of those things that are of most significance. There's been several points made, which are made again in my testimony there. Transportation, as has been mentioned, is a very large part of our budget. It's like $600,000 out of about a $4 million budget in our county. And in terms of the efforts to save money and reduce things, if we could do that, we would do it, as we have been in a mode of spending cash carryover for the last several years. And given the current budget situation, we will probably continue to spend some cash carryover as the budget comes in the future. I guess one of my concerns is I'm going to be traveling back when I get done here today to a budget committee meeting that hasn't even heard of this amendment or what this might do to our budget. We were already looking at cutting about $500,000 out of our $4 million budget, which is like 12%, trying to get to a balanced budget. And this would be another $155,000 out of our budget, and it would impact children greatly. We have bus routes that hit at the area of about an hour one way, and we try to keep them at an hour because there seems to be this feeling in our district that if you go over an hour, there's some state law we're breaking. But we try to tell them that it really isn't state law about going over an hour for a bus route. As I've heard from John Day and some of the others, they have routes that run significantly longer than that. So I guess I should take that message back. But we do try to consolidate routes whenever we can, but when we exceed an hour, then we start going back the other way to see what we can do so that children, especially kindergartners that fall asleep on the buses, don't do that on their way home or have to get up far before daylight on the other end of the chart there. I guess one thing that came to my mind as I studied some of the formulas that have been developed for the school fund is, and I was a special education director, is that I look at the high cost disabilities grant, which I believe was $12 million back in 2003 when it was implemented. And I'm hearing that this is a $2.7 million shift is what someone mentioned. And that's not a whole lot of money as compared to a $12 million plus high cost disability grant, which also comes off the top of the budget process before we start looking at the other things. So, you know, I would not recommend anyone look at taking the high-cost disability grant away and distributing that money throughout the rest of the budget, because that would hurt districts like Salem and Portland that have very high percentages of high-cost needs kids. So they wouldn't like to see that, and I wouldn't recommend it, but it's some of the same logic that we're looking at here to take this money away from the small school districts and, you know, give some help to some larger districts, which is, as been pointed out, is a very small amount. So that is pretty much what I had to say, because many of the points I was going to make and have made in my written testimony have been made already, and I would be happy to entertain any questions or turn it over to Tom.
Thanks. Let's finish with the panel, and then we'll have questions. Welcome.
Madam Chair, committee members, for the record, my name is Tim Porter, and I represent the Condon School District. I'm the principal of the K-8 grade school and the 9-12 high school, and next year I will be the superintendent and principal of the K-8 grade school and 9-12 high school. I'm here in opposition to the amendment to Senate Bill 555. First off, the points that have been made previously, I'm not going to reiterate because they're all excellent points. Suffice it to say that I agree with them. One of the things that I'd like to speak to is our district in particular. Our district has about 120 students. This reduction would be approximately $75,000 for our school district. That would be 4.3% of the state funding that we receive. To give an example of comparison for that, the Woodburn School District, which would see an increase of approximately $72,000, that would be an increase of 0.16% for them. So a 0.16% increase versus a 4.3% decrease to the funding we receive from the state. Again, a point was made earlier about the equitable distribution of funds to the schools for educating our students, and I'm sorry, that to me just does not seem equitable. The other point that I'd like to make is that we have 11.5 teachers teaching K through 12. $75,000 reduction would make that, we would have to reduce that by another staff member. We don't have any electives. Unfortunately, we don't have art and music like my colleague from Joseph. We've already cut that from our budget. We have one elective teacher who teaches ag classes, and that teacher is funded by a local option levy, not by the state funding. So we have zero elective teachers funded by the state. We would have to reduce that another teacher from our district, and I'm not sure how you do that when you're required by the law to teach all the core concepts. So for us, it would be a major reduction in the amount of money and the education we could provide to our students. And at this time, if there's any questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Gillespie.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Debbie Gillespie, and I'm the superintendent principal at Dayville School District. Dayville is about 32 miles from John Day, and we combine for sports teams with Monument. So not only do our students travel long distances just to come to school, but to go to practice, they travel about an hour a day. We don't have anywhere else to cut. Our funding reimbursement for bus transportation has been 80 to 90%. We have six teachers. We fluctuate between 48 and 53 students, and that's K-12. This year we have one kindergartner, no first or second graders. So the school is very small. We don't have any elective teachers as such. These teachers teach all of the 7 through 12 classes. Our bus drivers do multiple jobs. One bus driver teaches a 7th and 8th grade art class as a teacher assistant. And one of our bus drivers is also one of our cooks. So they're spread pretty thin. We've been fortunate that we have not had to cut days. We have an adequate cash carryover at this time and do not have to cut anymore for this coming year at least. If we have to make the additional cuts in transportation, right now I just don't have any idea where it's going to come from. So I support what the other small districts have said, and I won't repeat the same information, but we do oppose this bill and appreciate the time that you're taking to listen to our concerns. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions from the committee?
Madam Chair.
Senator Hess.
Well, this, you know, I acknowledge this is a very difficult issue. And the district where I represent, Beaverton, will lose $1.2 million in this bill through transportation, which is, I think, a bigger budget than some of the school districts have come up before us, just their total budget. And so it really begs a very difficult question, which is, okay, there are some places where kids are bused in 50, 60 miles away. And so what's a higher priority in this state? Or what's fair to spend X amount of dollars to bus a handful of kids in, 100 miles, or two busloads of kids in Beaverton, 5 or 10 miles? And that's really what we're trying to do here, is to find some sort of equity here in a time where school budgets are in rapid decline. So that's kind of the line we're trying to draw here.
If I could respond just a second, you know, we've built our budget based on a 90% reimbursement fund for this year. I've only been there, this is my third year, and we've never been to that 70% level. So the difference I see is in between the 70 and the 90%. You know, if we went from 90% down to 84%, 83%, that would be easier to manage than going down to 63% for us.
Madam Chair, Senator Hass, you're correct. Your district does lose $1.217 million in transportation funding, but it increases your funding by $1.224 million through the general purpose grant. So your district's actually getting an increase in overall funds. The district that I'm from, when you add those two together, is getting a decrease of approximately $75,000. Percentage-wise, for a percent of our budget, as you alluded to, that is a significant difference.
Other questions from the committee? Senator Morris.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I was to put this into a metaphor, I could visualize a chessboard. And the rural schools just eliminate their knight, king, bishop, rook. And the big schools eliminate a pawn. And it's a proportionality issue of its impact of large versus small. And, boy, in good conscience, with very compelling testimony, I'd be hard-pressed to find favor with this bill.
Other questions, comments? Thank you very much. By the way, I had lunch in the Condon School playground one year, Cycle, Oregon.
our economic development.
Okay, one last panel here, if I can find my right sign up. Mark, let's see, Mark Jeffrey, David Williams, and Michael Shields, I think.
Madam Chair, will they come up?
Senator Hass.
I would respond to Senator Morris saying, you know, probably not to the degree we should be, but I think the formula does try to take in small schools, take in consideration the logistics and the geography with the weighted formula for small high schools, small rural schools, which, you know, Corvallis, Portland, Beaverton does not have.
Welcome. Let's have the Paisley testimony first. Although you didn't say that you were from 100 miles away, I wonder how that works.
Madam Chair, and members of the committee, actually, I stayed in Wilhelmina, which will be my new school district next year, so I really didn't come all that far today. I will be going home that far, though, this evening. Paisley is...
Can you give your name?
Yes, please? I'm sorry. My name is, for the record, my name is Superintendent Mark Jeffrey. I'm the superintendent and principal for Paisley School District. Paisley is located about 2.5 hours southeast of Bend. It's a district of about 80 students, K-12. I also am here to speak on behalf of the remote necessary school districts, which by statutory definition are those districts under 110 students, more than 20 miles to the next nearest district or a community of 5,000. Several of them have already spoken. And I would like to keep my comments brief because they've covered the points very well, and that is that essentially there is a disproportionality in the impact when you look at dollars per student. And it's nice to see Stephen Meyer up there. He gave some great testimony this November, I believe it was, on the small school study that was done during the interim, and it indicated that any district under 150 students has been underfunded in the current school fund formula on average $125,000. That's in a good year, and the effects of this bill only add to that. So one of the other superintendents had mentioned that they have been having to spend down their cash carryover, and that's generally what happens is you aren't funded adequately. You cut programs down to the bare minimums that you can, but because you lack any economies of scale, with 80 students we don't have a lot of economies of scale, you reach the point where you are then forced to live off what you have in reserves, and when those are gone, you don't have a lot of options left. And this bill will accelerate that process for 12 of the 13 remote necessary districts in the state. So that's all I have to say. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Your turn.
Chairman Burdick and committee members, thank you for hearing. I'm Michael Shields. I represent Oregon Pupil Transportation Association. I'm the past president. I'm also reside at Salem Kaiser as their transportation director. It appears to me that we're making efforts at examining our funding models to generate efficiencies in school transportation. If we wish to pursue efficiencies, I think we need to talk about other things such as bell schedules and program offerings and early releases and common school calendars, things that they do. And I heard Beaverton mention they have particular program decisions that generate their cost, and as do each school district. One of the things that we need to do, perhaps, is examine our best practices and benchmarks and systemic processes. Those are the keys, I think, to looking for efficiencies and money savings. One of the concerns I also have is school districts have to have a budget prepared, and most school districts are way along in that process at this point, and to change the funding model at this point, I think, is very impactful. Helping large and small school districts examine their service levels and their standards of expectations, I think, is where we need to start our examination. I believe transportation departments in this state are as efficient as they can be, given the constraints based on each individual school district and local controls' decisions for what types of programs and what types of offerings they have. The funding models being equated to efficiencies versus service levels and practices, I think, aren't the approach to attain those improvements. A metaphor, perhaps. We're trying to decide on building a house, and we haven't decided what kind of floor plan we're going to make. And so I think we're making the decisions in a different order than we need to examine. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Dave. Chair Burdick, members of the committee, David Williams with the Oregon School Boards Association, also in opposition to the amendments to Senate Bill 555. I think you've heard some pretty compelling testimony about the needs, transportation needs that are placed on these rural districts. I'm struck by the fact that kids are, you know, getting on the bus at 5:30 in the morning and traveling the kinds of distances they are. And really, for us, it is a policy, a choice about maintaining those kinds of communities and still offering a free and affordable public a free and public education for the children of the state of Oregon, that no matter the distance to the central schoolhouse, we still want to find a free way to get those children into the building so that they can get the kinds of opportunities to advance themselves and get the kind of public education they need. And I think that is the choice we've made around the state in maintaining these programs in places like John Day and Paisley and Monument and Dadeville and all of the folks who have come before you today. When this measure was put into place, these 70, 80, and 90% reimbursements, the choice was made that in those districts with those high costs, that and Madam Chair, you mentioned it exactly before in response to a question, and that really is about the proportion, that 10%, the district cost, 10% on a much higher dollar amount very well could equal 30% on a much lower dollar amount. So when you talk about actual dollars expended sort of out of the pocket of the district beyond the reimbursement rate, you're really talking about in the ballpark for some of these districts versus a 70%, an 80, and a 90, they could very well be very similar overall dollar amounts in that out-of-pocket cost due to the nature of the high cost in those districts. So we would urge you not to approve Senate Bill 555 as amended and really reconsider this this policy choice. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? You know, this whole issue kind of reminds me of what we went through when Measure 5 passed and equalization passed at the same time. And the question is, do you equalize up or do you equalize down? And I can't help but think of how different this conversation would be if we were talking about moving everybody up to 90 or providing the level of basic school support that would make the issue irrelevant. And I personally regret that we're in this situation where we're having this kind of discussion. So, thank you very much. Other questions or comments from the committee? Okay, that's the last sign-up I have. Is there anybody else who wanted to talk on this? I will just say my intention is to move this issue down to the Senate Ways and the Joint Ways and Means Committee, where it will become part of the larger discussion on school funding. But I want people in the audience to know that I will have a conversation with the co-chair of the Education Subcommittee and relay some of the material that was said here. It was a very thoughtful discussion, and I particularly appreciate those of you who came from a long distance to participate in it. So, Senator Morris, I think we start out with a -1 amendment to Senate Bill 555.
Madam Chair, I move the -1 amendment to Senate Bill 555.
Senator Morris has moved the -1 amendment to Senate Bill 555. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? So ordered. Senator Morris.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 555 as amended to the Ways and Means Committee by prior reference.
Senator Morse has moved the Senate Bill 555 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation, with a recommendation to the President that he attach a subsequent referral to the Ways and Means Committee before it reaches the floor.
Madam Chair, you got that pretty good.
I don't know if that's right or not, but I think we all get the drift. Okay, would you please call the roll?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Just, if I might state, I recognize the broad relating clause in this bill and that the -1 makes no resemblance to the original bill and quite possibly the final bill, if it's moved, may have no resemblance to the -1 amendments.
Correct.
And I understand that. Notwithstanding that, to vote in favor of this bill, no matter where it goes, is something that I'm not prepared to do, so I'll be a no.
I understand that. Would you call the roll, please?
Senator Haas?
Aye.
Senator Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Senator Telfer?
No.
Senator Morris?
No.
Chair Burdick?
Aye. Okay, it's on its way to Ways and Means, and I believe that completes our agenda.